Welcome back to Label, the stories, rumors, and legends of Tooth & Nail Records. I'm your host, Matt Carter, and today's an extra episode that I thought you'd get a lot out of. This is a conversation with Chad Johnson and Johnny Grimes of Furnace Fest that Devin and I from Emory had on our Songs and Stories podcast, which is a subsequent evolution and iteration of the Bad Christian podcast, by the way. So you might want to keep an eye on that. But either way, this convo covers the just-announced lineup of Furnace Fest 2023. Tons of stuff to talk about within that with Chad and Johnny and Devin. There's so many cool bands that have been on this podcast and that this podcast loves that are going to be part of that that we haven't necessarily been able to discuss when they're on the show until the announcement. Talking about Haste of Day, 90 Pound Wuss, tons of great bands in there. So I'm going to just drop us into this conversation, and we'll be back next week with a killer episode from Bryson from Capitol Lights. I just had the conversation. It was awesome. You're going to love it. And I'm stoked to be rolling forward this year. I think it's going to be a big year for Labeled and for our scene as a whole. So do yourself a favor and join the Labeled Facebook group and participate there. Okay, here's Chad, Johnny, Devin, and me. Let's do it. Johnny and Chad, nice. Glad to be here tonight. Good. A bunch of talk about. We're going to get to a lineup, you know, really pretty quickly here. But I do want to spend a few minutes and let people know Johnny and his background and the evolution of the festival and how it came to come back again and some of those kinds of things before we get to the lineup. It's going to be really exciting. So, Johnny, you live in Birmingham. Chad's in Nashville. Yep. How did you and Chad get hooked up in the first place for this redoing of the festival? Did you know him all the way back from Slacker 66 and all that?
Yeah. So I met Chad at Slacker 66, going to shows and buying CDs at his record shop. So we've known each other for a long time, and just going to shows developed a great relationship. You know, like many other people, Chad was just a great mentor and a friend, and so we got to know each other really well. And so I wasn't involved in the planning or execution of the first Furnace Fest, but I went. And I went in support of Chad by climbing the fence and sneaking in and having a great time and jumping on stage and tackling Jordan from Newfound Glory and almost getting kicked out. But
how old were you?
I was 20 at that time. So
I had to help pry Johnny off of Jordan's sweaty body and threaten him with, you know, expulsion from the festival, like a principal, if he were to jump on stage and bear hug the singer or anyone else again.
So you were working security at that time, as well as everything else back then.
I was a bouncer. I mean, I'm a pretty big dude. I was a bouncer.
Can you guys tell me? Yeah, I was just going to say, can you tell me a little bit real quick about the first Furnace Fest? Because you guys know this, I told you before, but that we were 5 hours away in college in Rocket, South Carolina, and we had a little glimpse of this and that from listening to Deep Elm Records, and we knew Tooth & Nail, and we started to hear about Take Hold, all this stuff, but we didn't really know what the scene was. We didn't have it where we were, or we didn't know about it, but we didn't really get to be a part of the first Furnace Fest because we weren't really technically a real band yet. I mean, we're just getting started. So what were those first years of Furnace Fest like? I mean, you were, Chad, you had bands coming through your venue. You're kind of getting to know some up and coming bands. So what made you decide to put on a festival? And then how was it? Like, what was that like so early on in this indie world? Because there wasn't many of these kind of festivals happening at this time, right?
No, I mean,
maybe Cornerstone-ish.
Right. Right? I mean, there was Cornerstone, Tom Fest, trying to think there, Crazy Fest, Hell Fest. I mean, there were some, but there were not many.
Not many.
Well, it was a complete and total disaster, you know, like from a business sense, right? Because it never made any kind of business sense. I mean, it was, it would be like, if as a 20, maybe 25 year old, you convince your newlywed wife that the best idea you could come up with is put together a 3-day festival and just invite a bunch of bands and hopefully you'll be able to pay them when it's all over. I mean, it was extremely unorganized, but I think all of us were just so young and it was just so exciting to be together, and kids showed up, at a level that was, I mean, we had some really cool shows in Birmingham, not just at Slacker, but at other venues. But Furnace Fest was like, whoa, this is like, to see a band like Strong Arm reunite or the Dillinger Escape Plan playing that Shed stage at night before any of us really knew what was possible. When the sun goes down in the Shed, mm-hmm. It was, yeah, man, it was, I don't know. It was very, how would you describe it, Johnny? I mean,
it was super unique in the sense that it wasn't Cornerstone or it wasn't Crazy Fest. Like, we went to Atlanta and Nashville and we would go to Florida for shows and festivals, but in Birmingham, the scene was so unique because there was a Crush Warehouse was like the Christian venue. And if you're a Christian band, that's where you play. But if you weren't Christian, you didn't play there. Then you had like American Beat and Big Dance and all these overtly like this where your secular punk bands and hardcore bands would play. But Slacker was this kind of like, you know, silly, but like it was this, you know, venue where all these bands merged together and played. And it was, for the most part, it was relatively friendly.
That's the thing that seems that like is that is so, you know, magical might not be the right word, but it's just that crossover thing where you're connecting scenes from Christian right. to not right. that just turns out to just have been a huge thing that
I think so
really added like, value yeah. from like separate worlds all of a sudden. And it starts around the time that technology and connection, internet and BYOFL. But yeah. there's some breakthrough there that people like you and Brandon and other people just understood. It's like they can connect all these things now.
Yeah. And that's what made Furnace Fest so unique is that you would have Strong Arm and the Dillinger Escape Plan playing. And that's what it made it so unique. And when I attended all 2000 to 2003, attended every year. And you just knew like this was something special. It was kind of cool. Of course, the venue is amazing. But you knew yeah. that this was just something that was a little bit different and it was unique. And to be able to experience it was, man, it was really cool.
Yeah. So that was our transition time. We yeah. moved from Seattle. We moved to Seattle in 2001, you know, and then it took us till 2003 to get to where we could play good enough and had good enough songs and could just make an impact in the local scene or whatever to get noticed and write these songs and stuff like that. So, and by that time, Chad's all, you know, out in Seattle and we play in the basement of Tooth and Nail. Were you there for that basement show at Tooth and Nail?
I was.
Right.
Wow.
You know what I mean? So it's like awkward. This weird full circle things. We heard of Take Hold and Deep Elm, all that stuff. Furnace Fest started and then we both migrate to Seattle and then we do that, you know, meet up in that basement, I guess. Pretty much.
Yeah, that is crazy. Wow. I think one of the things that helped Furnace Fest in the original days feel so special and be so unique was that so many of the artists were already connected. They were already touring together. They're already playing together. So it did have a like a family reunion kind of feel that wasn't just these are all random varied bands that have never actually interacted with one another. So it was just like, oh, what's up, dude? You're here. Mm-hmm. Man, how was this thing? How's that tour? How's this going?
Yeah.
But yeah, it was.
So that was in the DNA from the get-go.
Yeah. I think it was.
That reunion feel, because that's all that was mm-hmm. what was just really crazy at the first one back.
Oh, yeah.
Johnny, how is it true that you talked Chad into getting back to doing it? Like, what was that process of?
I mean, I think so.
Becoming a partner in Furnace Fest. 100%
true. Not I think so. It is true.
Yeah. So I'm the kind of guy that's fairly persistent, and I'm very goal driven, and I'm like, okay, I want to do this. I want to see it happen, and so I just continue to pick away at it, and so. My persistence, and then again, we, you know, Ryan, who's a business partner of ours in Nashville, was also kind of in Chad's other ear, and so he was getting hit from all sides. But I think what really brought it together for Chad was when we decided to, you know, Chad was like, I don't know if anybody would care, and I said, well, let me just make a post on Facebook. Again, I don't have a large presence on social or anything like that. I'm just a business guy who owns hair salons and a few other things. So. I grabbed some photos from, I think, 2001 and just posted it on Facebook and said, hey, would anybody be interested in a Furnace Fest reunion? And people went crazy over it. It doesn't necessarily go viral in the sense that things go viral these days, but for us, it very much went viral. I mean, hundreds and hundreds of comments. And the one thing that, you know, I was like, this could really happen was, you know, Stretch Armstrong has been one of my favorite bands, you know, since I was a teenager. Absolutely love the band, and but didn't have a relationship with the guys at this point in time. And Scott saw the post and posted on it and was like, man, this would be awesome. And so I remember sending it to Chad going, look, Stretch is in, so let's do it. And so cool. At that point in time, we all got together and we were just like, let's give it a go. Let's try it. Look, you know, we can only miserably fail. You know, that's not the worst thing that's going to happen in life, right?
Yeah. That's when I was like, let's do a Kickstarter.
Yeah. So,
which of course, you know, thankfully got vetoed.
I really think that, you know, I know you did Come and Live, and there's something that's just really connected about the whole scene from what I would consider to be the support model in mm-hmm. that people, you know, even when they're buying your vinyl sometime or buying tickets, they are supporting something they value and they want to exist, or whether they join Emeryland or whatever. It's just like people want to fund things that they want to exist. So that the whole crowdfunding movement, you know, you come out of that from being a missionary and that kind of stuff, but it's not, I mean, it is fundamentally connected to what we do, is that people yeah. wanting to support the thing.
Yeah, I think it probably would have the same thing that happened once we announced Beloved, had we actually gone the Kickstarter route, I think we would have been incredibly shocked by the response, and it would have blown all of our expectations out of the water, and everyone would be like, okay, this is, you know, this is happening. But thankfully, Mike's point was, this is going to look really unprofessional to agents and managers and anyone that's thinking
that's
about
that's what's so,
you know,
good about it
this,
though. Right? I love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, these guys clearly don't have money. They're doing a Kickstarter. They're trying to fund their little fledgling festival from 20 years ago and see if anybody cares. But it was the fact that bands like August Burns Red, from like right from the get-go, where like it almost felt like there came a point where the bands were coming in so hot that we were the ones that were like, man, like, we would be complete idiots not to do this. Like, clearly, like bands were beginning to, like Johnny said about Scott from Stretch, like, it was the artists who were the ones pounding down the doors more than any of us as promoters. My old kind of like A&R brain was like, oh, maybe my old promoter brain or something was like, oh, this is different. Like, everybody seems to want to be a part of this. What in the world?
Well, that's so how so did cool. you mitigate that risk? That, like, it turns into what, like, you know, how much, like, how big did it get? How fast? And how did you, like, know that you were doing right with the numbers and stuff?
There was no mitigating risk. It was just
no. There was.
I mean, there was just us. You know, it was kind of a hope and a prayer at the beginning.
It was. That's true. It was. But then Johnny's right. But before from my perspective, the real risk involved the main stage. Because of the size, not just of the stage and the production, but of filling it, like all those extra bands, and at most of them at much higher guarantees. But thankfully, by that point, we had sold out the original footprint, and it was like, okay, well, this thing is now in the black, and in theory, it has made money, even though, you know, a huge chunk of that was caught up in with a credit card company that didn't want to pay us, and did not pay us until two or three months after the festival.
Yeah, it was 2 months after the festival, wouldn't pay us.
I mean, I've never followed up with someone so religiously. So Johnny too. I mean, all the time, every week. Hey, what's going on? When, what do you need? Blah, blah, blah. And it's just, ah, man.
That's crazy.
So you were able to roll the, I can't even imagine how you rolled the finances forward, starting from zero there to make that happen. I guess, but you sold the tickets or whatever. It kept getting bigger and bigger, I guess. But so you just scaled it.
The way that we handled it, we didn't start with a lineup like we do these days where it's 90 bands. Here you go. Hope everybody's happy. It was a few bands at a time. Like we announced Beloved. We announced Further. I can't remember a few bands. And then January 1, we're like, okay, there's 1,000 tickets available. And then those tickets went in like a couple of hours, and we're like, whoa, this is, so then there was, okay, now we got some funding to add some more bands. And then, so it did sort of organically grow. And I feel like we were just letting the fans tell us what, that's, you cool. know, like, what should we do next?
Yeah, yeah.
So we got to like 12,000 tickets on mm-hmm. that first year. And were the expenses really worth seven figures, spent more than $1 million to put it on?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so crazy.
I mean, putting on a music festival, I mean, blew our mind. I mean, we didn't realize that it was going to cost so much money, but you guys understand that, you know, the music industry is extremely expensive, whether it be the talent budget, production, security, insurance. I mean, just everything's so significantly more expensive these days. And so, yeah, it quickly got over six figures. And that's, and like I say, that it was just all a hope and a prayer. As we realize that, you know, this thing is a massive endeavor and it's going to be a significant cost to us, we were very strategic in saying, okay, if we're going to make these decisions, this is what it's going to look like. And we're essentially going to have to back into these things. Let's sell, you know, a couple hundred tickets and then let's lock this band in. Let's sell a couple hundred tickets and let's pay our insurance premium. And so we were very strategic and methodical on how we paid out, so that we didn't get into a position where we were like, well, we've got a $40,000 invoice that we can't pay. So even with this credit card company who locked us out and kept over $300,000 of ours over 2 months after the festival, thankfully we were able to kind of stair step those invoices. And we were in good graces with people. They were like, that's fine. And so as soon as they would release money, we'd be able to pay that. So we were strategic. But yeah, it's expensive to put a music festival on, man.
Would it be fair to say y'all been pulled into full-timeness ever since that? Like, you know, you guys became the Furnace Fest guys then. Since then, you've been being this role. It's your, like, a big identity piece for you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a... I would say that the full-timeness really comes down to the season. There are seasons where it's 100% game on and energy, you know, like just output extraordinaire. But then there are seasons where it's like, well, Johnny's going to handle that thing. Mike's going to deal with this thing. Ryan's booking the bands. I'm like, I don't really have that. I'll do a podcast. You know, I mean, it's, there are times where it's not bad at all. So, but it's because there's four of us that are splitting things up and then others who are like Elena, who are helping us where there's a community behind this thing that make it work in a way that takes a massive burden off of our shoulders so that we can all still maintain jobs and families and lives outside.
It obviously means a lot to a lot of people.
It does, man.
You know what I mean? Like it's vital to a large group of people. And that's what's so cool about what we were saying before is like, this feels like early on when you make this festival, you guys, you know, you did it knowing you weren't going to make money. You know, early on, you just did it because you're like, I feel like this needs to be done to a degree. I mean, people are hoping to make money, but the bands, I mean, they know, okay, we're going to go play for a little bit of money and hopefully something comes of it. But they did it because they knew it was something they probably needed to do for not only their own band, but for the scene. Yeah. And so that's what's so cool about this whole thing is it's like, like Matt said, it is a support system. It's something that doesn't really exist in the mainstream music people don't necessarily buy Pearl Jam because they want to support Pearl Jam. Yeah. They buy Pearl Jam because they like their music. Or, but in our world, it's like literally you've seen people who go from being poor teenage kids coming to shows, watching bands who make $100 a night, to being adults who make good money for a living that want to give you more money than you ask them to give you.
Right. Yeah.
Like to buy more t-shirts, to donate money
some
to whatever.
Some of the best bands you've ever seen lose money to play for you. Like, you know that is a thing. Right. Some of the coolest bands you've ever seen, you know they're breaking even, losing money to be there.
Yeah.
And the beautiful thing about that is, and not to be cheesy, but it's very much an identity. I mean, this is who we are. And the cool thing about the four of us is that we're all fans. But also beyond being fans, we literally, like, we believe in the ideals and principles that are hardcore and punk rock.
Yes.
And so and so people give to that and people rally around that. That's why we have a Facebook community group with 13,000 people in there. I mean, look, I mean, there are great music festivals all over the country, but I don't know of one that has an online community like we do, where these people literally get together all over the country at random points in the year just to hang out and have a good time.
It's
amazing. And one of the things that stands out to me is that everybody just brings and gives what they do. You mentioned Elena before, but like somebody like her is just giving it endless amounts of time and energy to just connect people and do stuff. And it just matters. It just works. It's like it, you, things wouldn't happen if there weren't multitudes of people like that.
Yeah. But
so she's a special one.
She is a special one. And to give you an example of something that happened last year, you know, the economy was in the, you know, in the tank last year. And so it was difficult for a lot of people, especially if you're traveling to Birmingham, Alabama, which is a third dairy market or whatever, you know, at best. And so it's very expensive to travel here. We realized that a lot of people were not going to be able to travel or to buy tickets last year because of the economy. And so we launched this ticket relief program. We posted online, hey, if you need help, let us know. We're going to try to figure out how to get you guys here. Well, we didn't ask anybody if they would support us in the ticket relief program. People just started emailing us, texting us, and sending us messages online going, hey, I want to give $500 towards this to help sponsor somebody. And we were just blown away about it. But that's just one testimony of what such a great community that's been built, not only just around Furnace Fest, but just around punk and hardcore in general.
Yeah.
That these people are like, well, look, man, I may not know this person, but I'm going to do my best to help them to get here so they can experience this and we can all experience this together. So it's been really unique and really cool.
Well, that was also
really
cool about
Go ahead, Devin.
Sorry. I was going to say, tag on to that real quick. That was what was so cool about that first year coming back in 2020. It was 2020, right? Yeah.
After 2021.
COVID. 2021, sorry, after the pandemic. So that was what was so cool about that, being there, the bands and all the fans and the whole thing. It felt like a celebration of what we've accomplished. Like, that's more than a music festival. It felt like a bunch of fans and a bunch of bands that were kind of on this even playing field. It didn't feel like there's all these, you know, rocker dudes and all these peasants walking around. It felt like we all built something, and this is where we are. We get to celebrate what we've built. There was no bands that were jealous of other bands. Every band was watching each other. Everybody was celebrating what was happening. And that was what was so neat about that. And that it just felt like that's what felt to me so different than a normal festival. It just felt like this real celebration of a community that was built that everybody kind of had a hand in. So that was what was really neat to me about that. Sorry, just to tag on to what y'all are saying.
And that, it has to have the Christianity has to be a part of that. And I know it's not even a Christian thing like anymore, but some of the shared values of, I mean, that's in there. It's like the values that are there are really of the community. Like Christians are really good at that. Like the Tom Fest you mentioned and stuff. I mean, it's just that there's something there that where people are a little bit more supportive of one another that's really – really neat is the way I would put that. And it's like you have that 2021 festival happens, and then all of a sudden this whole thing is back, and it's just, you know, it's crazy. And that community that is there in that Facebook group, it's going to last a really long time. even yeah. it's the relationships in there are going to last longer than Facebook probably ever lasts, you know, like, or when Facebook groups aren't a thing anymore, those relationships will still be a thing because it's real somehow.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't necessarily know if it's exclusive to Christianity, but definitely that's a huge part of our ethos and who we are as individuals and how we just live our lives. But again, it's some of that, it's those principles in which I think, I guess cross ideologies and lifestyles.
Right.
And so, so you can have somebody that's there that's completely unreligious or whatever, unbelieving, but still kind of cling to those core values of community. Yeah,
that's right.
And those types of things. And that's, again, that's what's so beautiful about it.
Well, let's get to some really exciting stuff. Let's talk about lineup. Let's talk about,
do it.
You know, I guess by the time this airs, we're recording this, the announcement's coming out on what, Wednesday?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is a few days later, but I feel privileged to have gotten the flyer. I'm looking at the flyer right now. I see all the bands, all I can do is read them. Devin, do you have them?
Yeah, I'm pulling them up here real quick.
Pull them up here. So, I mean, all I can do is say them out loud day by day, and we can react to the bands and stuff that we're going to say. I mean, that's what there seems to be to do now, because this is very exciting. So I got September 24th, 22nd to 24th, 2023. Tickets and more at furnacefest.us. I'm looking at this poster. The poster looks good. The first year's art was the coolest, the way it looked hand-drawn by the Sharpie. But this one looks really good, too, now that I see it in its fullness. It's awesome. So there's some story about Friday becoming a full day. So that's been really awesome, right? That's what we're leading with here, is that Friday is now a full day when it wasn't going to be before. How did that work out?
It's one of those things that in theory we thought made sense when we approached this year, because I think that there was an idea that if we did exclusively a shed bash, like just one stage on Friday, that would give everybody a little more breathing room to only turn up on Saturday and Sunday. And so then we'd make those 2 days the main days. But then, of course, what happened is like the backlash from people that kept telling us, like, well, there's no band for me. I want to be there on Friday, but there's no bands for me, or there's nothing that's really like my thing. And so I'm, you know, so then I think we just, it was something like, I don't know. We just toyed with the idea. And then
we made that decision because we were so exhausted. Last year was so difficult. It was so hard.
So hard.
And we were so stressed, and we were just glad it was over, to be honest with you. We were like, we can't do 3 days. And so let's just do a shed bash, and let's on Friday and do Saturday and Sunday. So it was made out of pure exhaustion, frustration, and stress. And then we realized, you know, with just through our community that, hey, we want more. And so we got to the place where we finally go, hey guys, are we not opening up Friday because we're frustrated with what happened last year and all the stress that came with that? And if so, should we go ahead and open it up? And the great news is we decided to take that leap of faith, so to speak, and open the main stage, open pond stage, shed stage. So it's a full festival day on Friday.
Awesome. Well, you know, people already know by now, but it's MXPX headlining Friday night. I'm going to read all of these, and then we'll react to them, because if we stop and talk about every band, we'll never, ever finish the podcast. But I'm going to try to read this. So MXPX, really big. Then we got Hatebreed, Amberlynn, and Reliant K.
Wow. All three of those go perfectly together, by the way.
That's unbelievable. That's just so cool. Awesome. That one line of the secondary billing says, hey, Braid, Amberlynn, Reliant K. That's freaking sick.
That's so cool.
And then I've got, I don't even know all of the bands here, so I might mispronounce them, but Alcoa, Gideon, Holy Wars, Hope's Fall, Kid Liberty, Knuckle Puck, Made Aware, 90 Pound Wuss, No Cure, No Trigger, Norma Jean, Open Hand, Orthodox, Piebald, Project 86, Showbread, Slow Pulse, Sparta, Taylor Acorn, Walls of Jericho, With the Blood Comes Cleansing, Witset, With Honor, and Vane.fm. I want to react to so many of those. That's just Friday.
You got Sparta.
I just discovered today that I told Ryan Ward, who is the singer and brain behind Witset, that I was like, you got this one song that sounds so much like Emery.
I think we sang on one of their songs.
Yeah, he's like, that's because they were on it. I was like, oh, that's good. That's I'm glad you didn't just steal them.
I didn't even know Sparta was playing. I just saw Sparta.
Sparta is a huge band for us. We love Sparta.
Yeah, Sparta's great.
That's incredible. So cool.
So the ones I'm wanting to react, I'm wanting to react to every single thing. So MXPX is obviously going to be awesome. Reliant K, perfect addition there. Yeah, Amberlynn obviously belongs, but Hatebreed, that is so good. That is such, Reliant K and Hatebreed.
On the same line.
That's the best.
Yeah. So
to me, it shows you the heartbeat in at its purest level.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That embodies Furnace Fest from the very beginning. This is maybe to a newcomer, they'd see this and be like, what the, this doesn't make any sense at all. But if you were there at the start, you would know that, well, half of us were youth group kids. Half mm-hmm. of us were involved in our churches. We were putting on shows in our churches. Christianity and Christian faith were incredibly tightly knit to what mm-hmm. we were doing in our everyday sort of lives. But then, as Johnny was talking about, there's all these other bands on the other side where that just wasn't the case. And Furnace Fest tried to make space for everybody and set the table for everybody and invite everybody to it. So the Hatebreed and Reliant K.
So good. That's
rad.
That is so good. I just love that. I want to tell you personally that 90 Pound Wuss, that is really amazing as a reunion
awesome.
Thing. And I want to tell you that being able to have them on there is a big deal for Jeff. Jeff's a friend of mine here in Seattle, and I had beers with him recently when he said, let's get together. He was talking about doing with you. He was talking about negotiating and what would it mean to be a band again and how much money should they get. And he was so excited about this. And it's like a big deal to him. Like Jeff himself is like in a whole nother place now in life and just feeling so energized by this opportunity. So the fact that it creates the opportunity for reunion, of course it's good for the bill mm-hmm. and ticket sales and it's cool, but it really creates this opportunity that people like Jeff really get to do something that just feels so, it just feels so good. He's so energized by it. And that's just personal on my end. I know it and see it in him that he's so excited about it.
I'm so stoked that he said yes. And so that was me too. The thing that we were constantly, I know Chad and I were like, 90 Pound Wuss, man, it would be so cool if those guys got back together. And so, you know, Jeff and I have a mutual friend, Alex Early, who lives mm-hmm. out in Seattle as well. And I was like, just hit him up. Just say, look, if he's interested, ask him if I can call him. And so he was like, okay, I'll hear this guy out. And so it didn't take many conversations, but, you know, as I just shared a little bit with him, and he was like, you know what, let me talk to the guys. And so, yeah, that was one of those, when they finally said yes, it was kind of like an Elliot moment. You know, we worked for 3 years to get Elliot to say yes, and they finally said yes. And so, you know, it's one of those moments where they're not a huge band, but they were so influential of their time. And for them to be back on the stage, I think is such a special thing. So I'm stoked those guys said yes.
We're huge Piebald fans. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
Showbread again.
That's awesome. Yeah, I got a text from Josh in Showbread, and he said, what did he say? He said something like, I vow to disown you as a friend if you don't get us on the same year that you bring in 90 Pound Wuss.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you talk about how much it means to someone like Jeff, but then it's like there's that trickle down effect, you know, and all the other people that means. Like, we know of people who just were like, there's only one band that could ever get me to leave the comfort of my home and fly across the country, and that's 90 Pound Wuss. And it's like, we never would have guessed that was the band. And that, but I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah, the connections are just meaningful to people. You know, it's just, and there's lots of really good stuff. Project 86 is really cool. Yeah,
that's going to be cool.
That's a cool one to add. Showbread, Project 86, Piebald, Sparta. Anything else? That Norma Jean is going to be killed. I mean, Norma Jean is so just, good right now. Yeah, they are. Yeah. So, we did so many shows with them last year, but they sound, I mean, they are so focused and so good right now. So that's going to be incredible.
Their set at Furnace Fest last year was just unbelievable. So.
And yeah, I saw a bunch of footage of that.
Hope Falls is never bad. I mean, they're just unreal. And they've been there since the beginning of some of these early shows too, right? I mean, they were a huge influence on us early on.
Yeah. Right, I mean, just that Friday alone, unbelievable. It's unreal. So we're glad it's happening.
Well, the cool thing about one of the cool things and one of the challenges was, what do we do now that we changed it? Because the ticket prices were half, for Friday, ticket prices were half the price of a normal day. But then once you build it out, it's like, well, now you got to bring it back up to the price of all the other days. But we also know that kind of, it produces the potential to really dishearten people who didn't know this was going to happen. I mean, we didn't even know it was going to happen, but we decided, and I just feel like for Furnace Fed, this is kind of evidence of the way that we've tried to do business the whole time. But we said, let's just leave all of the remaining Shed Bash tickets. There's like 3,500 tickets for that, what we thought was going to be that one stage, at the price that they're at. And at least for like 12 hours after we announced this lineup, we're like, the prices are the same. So if you want to get them for half off, you can. And if they sell out, they sell out. That's, you know, that was always the plan anyway, to sell out the Shed Bash. But anyway, it's fun to be able to do crazy stuff like that and then still go back and try to think through how would we as like fans feel if instantly the price went up when, you know, we had no clue that they were going to build this thing out. Anyway, just
For the folks who bought 3-day tickets, you know, last week, they're getting a crazy deal. So, but
yeah, exactly.
It's true.
Devin, you want to read Saturday?
Yeah, I'll do Saturday. All right. Well, we got up top the big boys in Turnstile. Ooh. Yeah, that's like, I mean,
don't react. You got to read all the way through.
Okay,
all
right.
Yeah, you're not going to get through. All right,
next line down, we're talking Head Automatica. Wow, that's Thursday. Seosin, Enter Shikari.
Don't react.
Anxious. Okay. All right, then we're going down the next level. Anxious, Becoming the Archetype, The Bronx, Blessed by a Broken Heart, Drain, X-Toll, Foreign Hands, Gorilla Biscuits, Grand Champ, High Viz, is that right? High Viz,
yep.
Holy Name, Living Sacrifice,
nice.
Loathe, Mind Force, Narrowhead, The Pink Spiders, Scowl, Teenage Wrist, Terror, Training for Utopia, Wielded Steel, Will Haven, Youth of Today, Zayo and Zulu.
Yeah, man.
Wow.
Saturday's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, Saturday's crazy.
Utopia is, that's unbelievable to me.
Dude.
It's another 90 pound wuss kind of thing.
No doubt.
The reason that Training for Utopia in my mind happened is because Demon Hunter took place the year prior. And
yeah.
Both Don and Ryan were there and took in the festival themselves. And once you have, it's kind of like, once you see it and you experience it, then it's like, oh man, this, like what's happening here is so special and may not always be here. And so taking advantage of that, the moment, but Saturday, I think I'm going to lose my voice on MXPX, Anne Berlin, Hopes Fall, Norma Jean, 90 Pound Wuss, Open Hand, Showbread, Piebald, Taylor Acorn, Believe It or Not, Sparta, and Wit Said and With Honor. So all those bands, I'm going to lose my voice like four times over on Friday. So by Saturday, I'm just going to be squeaking, walking around. Yeah.
So good relationship with Turnstile then from the first time and then blowing up after being booked and all that.
Kind of man. Thing. I mean, we're super thankful for those dudes. I mean, we like to think that we, you know, were that springboard that projected them into the next hemisphere. Because they played Furnace Fest 2021 and they just blew up. But Turnstile is through and through, they're a hardcore band, no matter what. And they love and they believe in the ideals of hardcore. And so that's why they would say yes to a very small independent hardcore music festival in Birmingham, Alabama, when they could, you know, go to Riot Fest or wherever and just kind of overlook us. So we're stoked that those guys said yes to be the headliners on Saturday. We think that's huge for
us.
Amazing.
Awesome. That's a big one. I feel like I've seen Thursday 100 times in the last few years, or over the years. But Saosin, I hadn't seen in a long time, even though, you know, we have a good relationship with them. But Saosin is going to be – that's going to be good.
Oh, it's going to be brilliant.
It's going to be great.
I think that the sleeper to me, because I just discovered them, is Enter Shikari. And I don't know how familiar you guys are, but they actually have familiar. A couple of songs that kind of remind me of Emery in parts. And I even had to double check. And I was like, wait, did they do this song with Emery? Because it was that similar. It was like a Wit Set moment. But I don't think they did.
Just discovered a band that's 20 plus years old.
Yeah, dude. And my mind's blown. I'm like, this band is so good.
I'm familiar with their name, but I've never spent any time on it. But they'll definitely do that.
They're from Britain, so.
Yeah.
They're from England, but they're like, they used to be like a MySpace.
Mm-hmm.
Techno metal band, I don't know, a screamo band. I don't know what. I feel like you guys would have crossed paths together, but now it's like way poppier, still a lot of electronic, but I don't know. It's incredible. They are the band. That's them cool. And Mind Force are the two that I feel like are just like popping. At me well, so hard
you know,
right now.
European is not a disqualifier for me, but X-Tol, awesome.
Yeah. Oh my
because
god,
that's gonna be... so. But they hadn't been playing, or they have? Is that a? Is there a reunion?
No, they haven't.
That's a reunion. That's a special thing, right?
Yeah,
yeah. As far as we know,
it's the only show that they've played in like I don't know 12 or 14 years or something.
We played a show with X-Tol in Seattle. Wow. It was at some small place.
You might have been there, Chad.
This was like, this is probably 03, early 03, late 02, somewhere in there.
With Agony Scene and X-Tol.
Agony Scene and X-Tol. And Emery, not a heavy metal band.
And there was probably 60 people there at some little
And they
bar.
Looked disgusted by us. I mean, the fans like, why are you guys playing with X-Tol?
Yeah.
But X-Tol was awesome. So awesome.
Yeah, so good. Yeah, and that was one of those things that we were like, we couldn't believe they said yes. So we're super stoked. But, me personally, like Gorilla Biscuits is like a unicorn band for me to see and Youth of Today. So, I mean, I love that.
That's awesome.
Kind of old school New York hardcore, that posse hardcore movement.
Is Bronx is some kind of from that scene too, right?
I don't actually know where the Bronx. They remind me a little bit more of like, I don't know. I guess like I think of Every Time I Die for some reason.
I remember
like
them.
When I see them, but I'm not super. Familiar. That's the great thing with Furnace Fest is like a couple of us are super fans, and a couple of us are like, "Who's this band? Let me check them out."
No, I remember that band from all the way back. Yeah. But MX2? Living Sacrifice and Zayo. Whoa.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, that's just that's exactly Furnace Fest.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. That's just
And they're playing back to back. So
I think it's supposed to be here. We'll take a quick peek. Are you already looking at it, Johnny?
Yeah, it's Living Sacrifice, Zayo, Training for Utopia, X-Tol.
Wow.
Okay, so it feels like there's going to be some Training for Utopia, Zayo. They have a split EP, so they got to do some guest appearance thing.
That's cool.
We haven't heard anything, but I mean, one can back only to back. Come on. Imagine.
Make yeah. a dream. You can dream.
Right. We can dream. But I think that Holy Name is maybe the most exciting Christian project that I've come across in years. It's so in your face, just like it's kind of like what I remember the early days of Come and Live being, where the hope was that we would create this kind of like environment for people to experience God's presence through worship. And they're doing that, but with like just the really heavy songs. And I don't know, man, I've been so refreshed by what they're doing that I think that's going to be, I think even cool. They're playing the pond, which typically you don't think of the pond being like an overflow problem or like having space issues. But I think we're going to actually have a like human bodies don't fit in that space kind of thing. So that's my prediction cool. anyway.
That's awesome. So
Anxious
Saturday's
or another one.
Insane.
Oh man, so good. Zulu's crazy. Yeah.
That's rad.
All right, let's do Sunday. I'll read it.
All right, here we go.
Bane, Pennywise. So we got two on the top line there. And then Haysaday, Between the Buried and Me and the Bouncing Souls. Another incredibly hilarious line. Haysaday, Between the Buried and Me and Bouncing Souls. Okay, keep moving. Yep. A Plea for Purging, Armor for Sleep, As Cities Burn, The Callous Dow Boys, Casey, Chasing Victory, Defeater, Further Seems Forever, Goatee Hook, Gutter, Jeez. Inclination, The Insiders, It Dies Today, Judge, May, the Military Gun, One King Down, Prayer for Cleansing, Qualifier, Strife, Taking Meds, Trash Talk, Trenches, and Valley Heart.
Wow. To
Sunday. Wow. Big day.
Gotta send everybody off feeling.
People are gonna be so
feeling
tired.
As hyped as they started. They're gonna be so tired.
I would not want to play Sunday, but I've some of the Sunday shows seem like they've been incredible, right? Like to me, everything we ever do, I want to play first on the first day. I want to be done. Yep. That's what I want. That's me.
I think you're wise. I think that the reason there's a Bane and a Pennywise and a Haysaday and all those stacked up is just because if we don't do that, then the temptation is like, I'm tired.
Yeah. There's some incredible shows that have been Furnace Fest Sundays have been some of the most incredible shows though. Like there's been like, you know what I mean? Like people get where they need to be for whatever it's going to be, but you would think people would be tired, but like by Sunday, it's just, you're so enchanted by the, like you're almost having the summer camp feel like I live here forever. And you're so in it by that time. It's a different feeling that first fresh day where it's like, what is all this? You know, it's so different.
The first year back, it was Knock Loose and Turnstile, Close the Shed, and then Killswitch Engage, Close Main Stage. Jeez. So
nobody's tired when that's really happening. You know what I mean?
When Adam's just hopping up and down on stage.
That's insane.
Yeah.
I mean, that's crazy. I mean, Bane and Pennywise, like that's wild.
Yeah.
That's just wild to me. And then obviously you got As Cities Burn, which Lunsford is supposed to be on here tonight and he's not on here.
Yeah, where's Lunsford? I wanted to ask him about this. I was excited.
So as we record this, Lunsford couldn't make the show tonight because he was busy. But he I got the lineup leaked. We got the lineup early to see this, to record this episode. Lunsford didn't know they were on it. He didn't know. He was like, "What?" We're like, "You didn't tell us you're going to be on Furnace Fest," and he said, "I didn't know we were on it." So he did. You know, he said that they had asked about it, and he said that they weren't going to do it, or he didn't want to do it. But they're on it, so it's still left to figure out. And we'll talk to him next week or some other week.
The reason he couldn't join it, he's got to have some conversations.
It's possible that they got to have a different drummer or going to play because he said he wasn't going to do it. But yeah, they're on it. So I don't even know what the story with that is.
The only thing that I see wrong with this is that there's no Emery, there's no Under Oath, there's no Beloved, there's no Terminal, and there's no He Is Legend. Well, I wonder you if you had to guess as one of those bands, why would promoters potentially pass over you for something else?
Well, I didn't want to put, I know, you know, it's tough out there, but since we started getting six figures for shows and festivals, it's
that
just,
is true.
We didn't want to put that you know, to you.
Yeah. I appreciate that way, you guys. Yeah. About
like under oath in a six figures kind of thing. So it's just the economics of it. I just don't think you can afford it.
You know,
it is that. That's true. No, Devin, go for it.
No, I was going to say, you know, what's crazy is we have some other plans like this summer and fall and they're more than normal. Because we're not the full-time touring band. You know us. We do what we can when we can do it. And, you know, we talked about playing Furnace Fest. That came up. And it was like, oh, man, I don't know if we can squeeze it in. Honestly, it would be so difficult for us and our personal schedules. And it bums me out, honestly, because I see this lineup and I know what it feels like to be there. Mm. I know what it feels like. And that hurts me that it can't happen. But, I mean, it'd be so awesome to be there again. But I'll tell you what. If I don't know what the future of Furnace Fest is, I know you guys, you know, want to do as long as you can. But if you can get 238 there,
oh man,
you can I will guarantee that I will be there, and I will force Emery to play for any amount of money that it takes.
Wow!
If you get 238 there.
Okay.
We're planning on being there next year. That's like when we decided that this year might not be the right year for us, we just figured next year. So we'll be there next year. We intend to be there next year.
Yeah. And that's called strategy on our part. It's trying to look at, you know, album release cycles and the celebratory 20th anniversaries of albums like The Week's End, They're Only Chasing Safety.
That'll work.
I Am Hollywood. You know, there's a lot of stuff in
2020. Which happened to fall next year.
It sounds good to me. I don't know if we all have to go as a group. He is legend under oath and Emery, but I'll sign up.
You do. Yeah, you all can go sign as a group.
Yeah.
But if hypothetically Emery were on this year's festival, where would you want to be? Place physically on the flyer.
We got to play in the shed.
Okay, right. Yeah, and then that's what shed. I was going to, that was my next question. Then where, like what stage, what time, all that.
I want to play in the shed just near sundown.
Okay.
Would be sick. I mean, that's just a dream of mine personally. I would just like to feel nightness coming and I'm in the shed.
Yeah.
That's something I want to.
We never care about being last. We don't care about that. That's not our thing. We like to go early, get stuff done. But if you could play in the shed at that right as evening kind of starts to hit.
Mm-hmm. So like 7, 6:30.
The transition of day to night. That's my favorite thing is like because the late afternoon is my least favorite thing, like the late afternoon was hot sun nap time, but as soon as the nightness starts to bring a new magic and you're especially in the shed, like whatever that whoever gets that a bit, that's just the coolest thing in the world to me. So that's the way, but I, you know, the pond, something about that pond is cool in the way that the way you make it feel like it's more of an emo thing.
Yeah.
That feels good to me too. So my emo-ness wants to be on the pond, and that would be okay. But I don't know. I mean, it depends on who's before and after. I don't want to be in some spot where it doesn't feel good, or seem stupid or wussy compared to the hardcore bands or whatever. But that would be nice to be in the shed near sundown.
No, that's good, man. That's great. That's why we're talking. We are planning a year and a half in advance.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well,
this just seems incredible. What else is there to react to on maybe Sunday? Is if we didn't say May is going to be awesome.
Goaty Hook's going to be crazy.
Goaty Hook is going to be so fun. That's going to
be Trash Talk's going to be wild. Trenches. Oh man.
So
Day is a big deal. That's a big deal.
Oh, it's a huge deal. And so, but I was a 90s punk kid. So having Bouncing Souls and Pennywise. That's so cool. You know, with Bouncing Souls singing True Believers and then Pennywise, the bro hymn and Fuck Authority.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's going to be epic. Just ringing across Lost Furnace, you know, the bro hymn is something that I'm like, I'll probably shed a tear.
But Bane is a huge thing. But what did Bane have? They stopped playing and are playing again. And what was
took like a 7-year hiatus, released a documentary that I just watched. It was actually really, really well done. And but they were one of those bands that they were like a workhorse band that just nonstop touring. And then they went away. And then this was the year. They're like, all right, we're going to do a couple of shows. So they're doing two hometown shows in Boston or Worcester, Mass.
Yeah, yeah,
and,
yeah.
And Furnace Fest. So
we played with them in Europe one time. Devin, do you remember that? At the big festival. And we were at some giant festival and they played in the afternoon and it just, they in Europe or whatever, and they just had this crazy crowd.
Yeah.
And I wasn't that familiar with them, but just saw their energy and what they were and just, and it was just totally killed in just somewhere in Europe. And it was like, everybody here knows Bane. It was really cool.
Yeah. They're one of those quintessential, like, great hardcore bands who have been so influential in the scene. And for them to say yes to Furnace Fest again was, I mean, we were just honored by it. So to have them and, we're super stoked about it.
That's awesome. Great. So much stuff going on. So, we've got Nick. Could we talk a little bit more about something you said before about last year being hard and the things that are difficult about this and the future?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, last year was difficult on many levels. One was that we made some bad financial decisions. I think if we were all honest with each other, we made some bad decisions, but also the economy really killed us because if you guys remember last year, travel was insane. It was like triple the cost of what it is now. And so to fly into Birmingham, Alabama was twice as much as it was to fly into it, to LA or to New York or Dallas or wherever. So for somebody to spend, a couple $100 for a weekend ticket, a flight, room and board, food, it was out of reach for a lot of people. And so we felt that and it was very difficult. So it created a lot of stress and frustration for us. That's not to say that the event wasn't, absolutely beautiful and amazing because we had a great time. The lineup was insane. To have Sunny Day Real Estate was, was a dream. And so it was a great lineup. But yeah, it created a significant amount of frustration and stress. But, thankfully we were able to navigate that and to, mitigate our losses and to be able to put ourselves in a position to where we could do really good this year. But yeah, last year was difficult, man.
So, go ahead, Chad.
I was just going to say, I think what made last year so hard was that we had come off of such an enormous win. We had worked through the pandemic, through postponing the festival twice, three times, I can't remember, several times anyway. And we dealt with being called Nazis and, like all these crazy things because we were trying to implement a safe festival coming back out of the pandemic. And we just dealt with, all the challenges that come with putting on a festival again. And it, everybody turned up. I mean, maybe some people would hear 12,000 as a number and think, well, that's nothing, like a Riot Fest is like 50,000, or this other crazy festival, Blink's playing, for however many, but Furnace Fest was probably 2,000 people at like a really strong average per year. So to 6x the original was like mind blowing to us. And last year just did not do that. And I think for me personally, as I look back, I realized that the first year went so well, I just placed all my energy elsewhere. And I was just like, okay, we'll keep doing Furnace Fest, but it's kind of like, well, just, I don't know. I don't know that anyone else on Team Furnace Fest would feel the same way, but I don't think that my heart was really in it. And as a result, I don't I didn't chase anybody the way I normally would, you know, like that 238 song, Devin, chase what makes your heart flutter, or whatever, however that is. I wasn't chasing what was making my heart flutter at all. I was just being a lazy ass and messing around with crypto and losing money. But really the truth, you know, like, but I think that it was a lesson that we all had to learn, you know, going through it. We almost broke up as a team. We were pushed to the very brink of what any small young business would absolutely despise dealing with, which is a very, very tough situation. And so even the fact that we're now looking at that, I have it pulled up on my computer and looking at this blue, you know, soft blue flyer with MXPX on Friday is just like, wow. It feels like the most monumental hurdle has been
to
overcome,
have survived.
You know? Like we're still here. I can't believe it. We're not dead. How's that possible?
So it sounds like you made money the first year and lost money the second year, if you don't mind me.
Yep. No,
saying
exactly.
It that way. That seems
that's
like
exactly. That's 100%. We made a lot of money the first year. We lost a lot of money the second year.
Yeah.
And the first year we did not expect it. It's like what you said, you know, none of us saw it coming. And so it was a total, I mean, at the start, we're like, we'll just do this for free. Let's just do a nonprofit. Who cares? This is just fun. It's all, you know, we had no idea how much time and energy and effort this would take. But then last year it was like, okay, now we know. And I think we came out of last year with like, if we're going to do this again, this lineup can't have even a crack or a seam or a like possibility of not delivering. Like if there's anything on this that just doesn't work, it can't be here because it's just way too risky any other way.
And so how's this year looking ticket wise and financially?
Yeah. I mean, we were just chatting with Mike. He texted a few minutes ago and we are almost exactly where we were 2021 before we announced the lineup. So it's really weird that right now we're like in this place where it's like the original footprint is like close to being sold out. The momentum is back. The excitement is back. The level of internet kind of, sensationalism feels back, the excitement, but also some of the hate mail, you know, just like, I can't believe you didn't add this band or that band, you know, but it's because people care and it just, it feels very strong. But I wish, you know, in some ways I wish we were doing this a week from now, cause then it'd be like, oh, now the lineup's dropped and I can tell you.
Exactly so there's some anxiety to how people react to this and what the ticket sales actually do. And are you going to be glued to what do you watch to see where they, like, how
I
do
watch
you...
the comments and the ticket sales. Definitely.
Yeah. Those comments and ticket sales are what we glue to. So yeah, I mean, we're super nervous, man. I mean, this is four guys putting on a music festival. This isn't Live Nation. This isn't eight.
Right, I know.
Like, this is four guys. I own a hair salon. You know, Chad works for.
I own a company. House for now. You know,
Ryan sells like, I don't know what he sells. He sells shit for like air hangers or whatever. Mike's a promoter in Dallas. Like, you know, we're not a huge company. So, I mean, we're nervous, but we're confident in what we've created this year. And so we're super stoked.
That's right.
You know, when I see that Bain sells out almost 7,000 tickets over a weekend for Boston or Worcester shows, it's kind of like, okay, when I see footage of Turnstile and it's like just bananas how many people are showing up for them alone, and then I see, you know, MXPX, and we're the only other festival aside for when we were young on their, you know, on their Instagram, it's you know, then just like those are sort of the three at the top. Then I start breaking it down like, okay, the extols, the not, yeah, mm-hmm. we're going to be fine this year, but last year was a very costly.
Do you hate booking agents?
No, how would you answer that, Johnny?
Who are you asking?
I'm just saying, you know, booking agents, they're out there. They're,
they're a challenge in the music industry. No doubt.
The hardest part is probably this, what we're dealing with right now, because we have what to us is a perfect flyer, but by tomorrow, this flyer will have red lines all through it. So one band will probably want to be higher than the other. Font needs to be bigger. What if we did this? What if we did that? You know, that part. But I would actually argue that the agents working with Furnace Fest have been incredibly gracious, super supportive, very, very easy to work with.
Yeah, no. I mean, picture you over there. Just talk like you text somebody that you know. It's like, oh, dude, totally. And it's like, yeah, talk to our agent. And you're like, fuck.
Yeah, like what?
No, I mean, it's. I think
I'll connect you to our agent. It's like shit. Yeah. I mean,
there are exceptions to the rule, but yeah. I won't
tell you what Kevin Lyman said about.
By and large. Because of the history that Furnace Fest has, I think that there's a level of rapport,
sure,
and respect that no, like, up and coming company could buy with any amount of money. It's like only time and blood, sweat, and tears gets you that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, the relationships are everything, because what else is it? I mean, if it's not the relationships you have and the people that want to do it and the agents, you know, realistically, they go to the band and go, but you want to do it. So how's this going to, you know? So I know you get some bands at deals and probably some bands at not deals. I can't even imagine. But, you know, there's a lot of bands that want to do it and figure out how to do it. And everybody, and there's the support part of it. But, you know, everybody thinks it's awesome. So it's, if you're the guys that can pull it together and make it happen with all the different forces, then, you know, it's a high stress thing that I don't envy. Like, I don't have it. I just don't even know why. I don't even know what you get out of it. Like, I mean, I you know, maybe you make money or something, but it sounds so stressful. I can't believe it.
It is very stressful, but it's also there's so much joy of seeing the community together and seeing even last year, even though we knew going into it, like, dudes, we're going to lose money on this. This sucks. Yeah. All of us, I feel like 95% of the festival had the best attitudes. We're like just loving our lives. You know, there came a point where we just had to turn off the money question and just like, you know what, somehow call it faith for some of us, call it, you know, just sheer willpower for others. You just said, we're going to make it. We're going to get through this. And we're in this together. There's thousands of people that think this is valuable and find connection and community here. So they're for us. They're with us. And we're going to.
If it was just another job, we would absolutely have.
Oh, yeah. Fold it.
And,
if it was just another job, but it's not.
Tail and
peace out. The I've never seen almost anybody more in their element than when you talked before the Beloved set in 2021. Like I'm standing on the side of stage with Devin and Toby and everybody in Lunsford, and it's like you go out there and talk before that epic set, and you talk like there's not a, like money isn't something that is related to what that moment must be or feel like to be, you know what I mean? Like whatever that was that you were experiencing at that moment, it's not, money's not really in relation to that.
No, I mean, there's always been and still is an incredible spiritual drive that is a hope that somehow in the midst of all of this craziness, that I can help, whether it's the 90-pound wusses that come back from the dead years later, or the Emrys that I've known for years and years, or the MXPXs that I'm a fanboy for and tripped over my words the first time they came into the Tooth and Nail offices because I couldn't believe that MXPX was in the house. You know, like that there's been a spiritual drive and a hunger for me to help radiate what and who Jesus means to me. And and not Furnace Fest is maybe the only place where Christians and non-Christians alike, I feel no awkward shame, guilt, weird feelings in saying that. I don't feel like I have to I don't have to justify what I'm about to say or kind of like, but you know, I'm not this kind of person or not this kind of, I'm not with these guys or anyway, it's just been, I think Furnace Fest has mattered far more to me and to all of us than we could have ever thought because it's bigger than any of us. So
that's cool.
Yeah. Stoked.
That's great.
How about the future of Furnace Fest?
Well, I mean, we've committed to do it through 2024. And so we haven't made any decisions,
You've committed to Emory's slot next year.
We've committed to Emory's slot at
6:30 on the shed. Right. Unless there's really heavy metal bands playing around you.
Right. Unless this just would be weird, then we'll just take an earlier time. It's going to be
Emory, then Deftones, and then we're done with the entire festival.
Oh, yeah. Oh. That'd be perfect.
I think that to continue in the transparency front, and we as a team, we really haven't talked about this as a group. So it is being made probably too transparent for a podcast, but I feel like the challenge with talking to you guys is that you're not just a podcast, you're friends. And so it's like, how do you talk? Anyway, I'm not good at being anyone other than just who I feel like I'm supposed to be. But in my mind, Furnace Fest will more than likely end next year. Like, that's just my gut. I could be wrong. I'm willing to be wrong. I was wrong the first time when Johnny said, let's do it. Mm-hmm. But in my mind, I already see 2024 Furnace Fest. The top of the flyer reads the last chapter. And that's just kind of because I think the level of risk that it requires to do this is there comes a point where that you have like kind of the pyramid and all of a sudden the level of risk is just more than what you're likely to deliver from it. I'm not convinced as of right now that we can keep delivering year after year after year the kind of lineups that we've been delivering. Right. And I think that we can do that. I know we did it this year. I'm convinced we can do it again next year. But then after that, even though it would be the 25th anniversary of Furnace Fest 2025, I don't know. I don't know where we go. Like I do. Well, I really struggle with that.
So let me say that I hope, and that I don't see the same thing that Chad sees. One, but two, Chad is right when he says that there's just a massive risk to this. And so it's tough in the music industry when you're just independent promoters who are trying to do something really special. I mean, it really is. And so there's a huge risk here. The reality is that we can't compete with them. We were Youngs and Riot Fest and those, we can't. And so bands are used to getting paid $50,000 to $80,000 a set. And we're like, you're playing to 8 to 10 to maybe 12,000 people in Birmingham and we're creating something super special. And they're like, we don't care.
Yeah. You know? It's just on a spreadsheet somewhere to some people at some point.
It's tough. And so, in order to do that really, we've committed to do it next year. So we're going to do it no matter what happens, but To do it past that would be a massive challenge. And so I hope that it happens, but who knows?
Devin or Matt, how would you envision the festival growing beyond next year?
My impression when I was there in 2021 was this would be so cool if they did it every 4 years like the Olympics.
Mm. Okay, cool.
That's just what I, because how can you do, you know, get something like this to happen every year? The year comes so fast. I mean, it seems so insane. And with reunions being part of it or whatever, there's plenty to do, but there's a ebb and flow to everything. And like, you know, festivals are big and then they all died and then that's something they come back. And then there's some weird thing about human behavior and cycles of anything. It's like, you know, I was texting with you earlier, Chad, about Bad Christian. It's like, well, it's on the shelf right now, but there's something. It's something. Mm-hmm. Like, there's something to do with it. That's probably at some other point. But there's things that are in cycles, you know, like that. So, you know, it's just when you're a band trying to do your year, you have to play a certain amount of shows and you think what you're worth at this kind of stuff. So for a lot of bands, I'm sure it's like, well, why would I take way less to do this?
Sure. And I'm right there
that's
with it.
That's something.
I get it.
Yeah.
We get it. It's
yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. I think for me, it's like the struggle is once you've reunited a Beloved, a 90-pound Wuss, a Maylene and the Sons of Disaster, mm-hmm. a Blindside, a Head Automatica, a Haste of Day, all these things. You can't just like a year later or maybe 4 years, but you can't quickly be like, hey guys, we have Haste the Day again, Bane again, Head Automatica again, Beloved again. I mean, yes, those are all great, but it doesn't have the same punch, right. I don't think, as it does that first time you hear it, you see it on your phone. You're like, what? I can't believe these guys got Goatee Hook. Like, wow, right. Man, I'm going to go listen to Sumo Surprise right now, you know? And 2 years later, it's like, they got Goatee Hook again, man. That's so cool. I'm going to go listen to Sumo Surprise. Like, we're not robots. So there's an emotional, heartstring that we're able to pull on. And I just think that our days are numbered in terms of how many more crazy, you know, like outlandish, reunion. I think if we could transition Furnace Fest to just being a regular kind of festival within the scene with these kind of bands, and everyone was okay with the fact that, but I just don't know that financially we can pull off I don't see it having the same effect. I don't know why somebody would fly all the way to Alabama when they could go someplace way cheaper and mm-hmm. cooler to see something even bigger. So,
well, way cheaper, but not way cooler, Chad.
That's true. Not way cooler.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like there's a little bit of space in the top section of bands that there's still bands that you probably could get mm-hmm. at some point. There's, you know, like you mentioned Deftones. That's kind of like a band that could straddle the fence of this world and into the mainstream world, obviously. And there's other bands that, you know, you guys probably haven't gotten yet that would be a dream to get to become to this festival. So having some of those options up there, and then you can, the mid levels and the lower level bands, I mean, those are kind of interchangeable at times, and you can find some other ones to fill spots and all that. But I get it. I mean, it's hard to be able to forecast that future of like, okay, can we make that impact year after year? Mm-hmm. After a year, I understand that stress.
That's some kind of business thing, but it's founded on your relationships with these bands that come and play for just because you want to make it happen. Like, it starts with that, and so, you know, I'm not a big fan of the Live Nations and everybody. You know, it's a different thing when you're dealing with them than with people you want to. It's just different. I mean, there's no other way to say it. Like, you know, there's the thing where you there will be people that want to do special things, and it will always be cool that it's different and done the other way or some other way. That'll always be cool, but there's only a certain amount that can, you know, if you stay open to that, there's always be, I mean, you never thought you'd be here now doing this, and you never know what there is. So it's nice to leave it really open like that is the way I think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, you're right. It is, it's too early to say. I think that, I think we've got a first step is get through this year and enjoy this year and watch how the community responds and then kind of ask ourselves, like, you know, yeah. Okay, but how do we handle 2024?